All right. Yesterday we had an awesome first panel. It was electric. It was awesome. It energized the speaker, and man, he blew it out of the water. Man, he was just woo. I'm still. Y'all ain't awake yet, are you? Oh, shit. Good luck, y'all. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to tell them to strengthen the damn coffee. But anyway, all right, so today our first 9 o'clock workshop is a better demonstration. And we feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes. It's okay. And affairs. So, all right. And the first speaker we have is Sam. Come on up.
All right, guys. Let me get my timer set here because you know I might get a little long winded. How y'all doing?
Good.
It's nice to see this bigger crowd here in Knoxville for 9 a.m. So, better demonstration. You know, when I got asked to speak on this, I thought, fuck. What are they asking me to do that for? You know? But in reality, you know, all I can really share on this is my experience. So, like, a better demonstration, when I was early in recovery, I spent a lot of times hiding from my family, mainly because they didn't want me around. You know, I'd stole every fucking thing they had and, you know, all this stuff. But, oh, I didn't even introduce myself. I'm Sam, and I'm a recovered drug addict. But, you know, I'd stole everything, and they didn't want me around. And I hid in the rooms of the other fellowship, and through that process, I started to gain a little bit of recovery. I started to act as if I was changing. And as a result of working the steps, I had a spiritual awakening that brought me to a change, to where people started wanting me around them. So, like, a better demonstration, it took me, like, 6 months to get a job. I had sores all over my face and shit, and I looked terrible. But when I finally got a job, I didn't steal from my employer anymore. I didn't take from them. I could work a cash register and not walk out with a couple hundred dollars in my pocket, you know. So I started to practice these principles that I was taught while I was hanging out in these rooms. And it first started in my occupation. Like, I was doing that, and I didn't have to go around telling people I was in recovery, you know. They didn't need to know, for one, but they could tell that I was a decent person, and that's all it was. And, like, I was going in, and I was working in fast food, and, you know, I was doing the halfway house thing for a while, and I started to become a halfway house manager. Like, I was big dog in the shit show. And, like, but the guy that owned the halfway house, he could trust me. You know, when I would call him and like, say, yeah, we cleaned the house today, he knew that the house got cleaned that day. You know, so, people started to want me around after a little while. You know, my family started to want me back in their lives. And I started going to my first time home after I got sober. You know, people still didn't trust that I was sober, you know. But because I was acting like a new person, I had the spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you know, they started to see that I had changed. There was no more of this, I'm telling you, oh, yeah, you know, I'm clean and, you know, I got 60 days, man, when really I'm in the bathroom with a fucking needle in my arm, right? So they could see the change in me. And for me, that's how I practice. That is a demonstration of this program. You know, I'd spent so many years bullshitting and telling people that I was changing and how this was going on. And, you know, life was just, oh, yeah, I'm sober now. I just got out of jail. And, you know, why don't you trust me? Because I hadn't changed. I hadn't had the spiritual awakening as a result of following the directions that's laid out in this book. You know, I was driving home last night, and my first, me and my wife, we was going down the road, and I seen a dirt bike on a trailer. My first thought was, man, I'd like to steal that thing. But the difference is, I didn't follow him home and steal it. You know, I just had the thought, I'm fucked up. Like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to drive down the road and see a dirt bike on the back of a trailer and think, hey, my first thought won't be to steal it. But the biggest difference is today is I don't do it. You know, I have the fleeting thought. I joke about it. You know, hell, I get Sudafed prescribed to me today. You know, and I'm like, that's $150 right there. But no, I don't do it because it doesn't align with the set of principles that I learned in this program. You know, it doesn't align with what I feel is right. You know, my first sponsor I had in this program, God, he saved my life. He saved my life because he showed me how this stuff works in his life. You know, he'd been married 10 times. But, yeah, Sabrina knows what I'm talking about. He'd been married 10 times, but through every relationship, he learned something new about himself. And with me, that's what I do. With every relationship I get in, whether it be, you know, which I'm married now, but with friends, you know, I've learned through this program that who I want in my life, because if you're not leading the same kind of life I'm leading, I'll still love you, but I don't necessarily want you in my crowd of people. And that's my, you know, that's my affairs. Occupation, man, I've grown so much through this program. You know, today in my occupation, I have access codes to everything. Petty cash, company credit cards, safes, gun safes. Like, and we got a gun. Like, I'll tell you, I'll go into the gun safe and I'll look and there's this nice little 22 Magnum. And it's been in there for 3 years since I worked there. And I'm like, man, they won't never know if that thing's gone. Like, I want that. But I don't do it because it don't align with my principles. You know, and that's all this is talking about throughout this page. You know, it says that, it goes on to say that we're helping, we want to help other people. I forget, let me look it up here. Yeah, because I got 10 minutes and I'm about done. Oh. It says, all of us spent much of our spare times in all sorts of efforts, which we are going to describe. We are fortunate enough to be, a few of us are fortunate enough to be so, I can't say that word, saluted that they can give nearly all their time to this work. You know, we don't make work of this. You know, like I was saying before, I spent all my time in AA meetings in early recovery. I wasn't able. They didn't want me around. But I didn't go make work out of it, you know. Hell, I'm rambling now. Clinch can have my time. That's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
I'm Tabitha. I'm an alcoholic, a drug addict. I'm recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. All right. Timer, maybe? Timer. Yes. Okay. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm not 6 foot tall, Emma. Can you guys hear me okay now? Is that better? Fantastic. Okay. I had the same response when I was asked to come and speak to you guys. I don't like to do this. I don't like to be in front of people. I get very jittery, and so this is, you know, God got me here. That's what I'm going to say. Because I don't, you know, I can sit, like, I can sit and talk to anybody one-on-one. But when I'm up here and I see all y'all's faces, I'm like, holy shit. And there's not, you know, it's like 9 a.m., right? It's not even that big of a deal, but that's how I feel. So I apologize for that up front. What it looked like before is I lived on the streets. I was a heroin junkie, your neighborhood interstate trafficker, and a pimp. That's the person that I was. Today, I'm a mom of, like, 3 college students. What the shit? You know? That's crazy to me. I sponsor people. I tell people how to get out of the fire. I have a sponsor. I attend a lot of meetings. I have a boyfriend that kind of, I mean, he still comes around, so I think he probably likes me. You know, like, I've kept him around for almost a year now. That's crazy. That is crazy. My boss gives me the keys to his business, his sole business, the way that he makes money, what keeps him alive, his daughter's tuition, his, you know, his daughter's future. He gives me the keys to that, y'all. Like, I manage his money. I manage his personal money, his business money, and he trusts me to do that. What? People give me keys to churches? I don't know how that shit happens. I'm a 3-time felon, you all. I don't know how that happens. But it's principles, right? It's spiritual principles. We work these steps. We have a spiritual awakening as the result of said steps. And then we learn how to apply the principles behind these steps. So I thought maybe, because I wanted to get all prepared for this, and, like, I read some stuff, and then God was like, stop. You're not doing this. And so I didn't. I put the book down. I put the notes down. I put the phone down. And I did not prepare. And I got up this morning, and I was like, okay, God, I didn't prepare. I'm like, now what am I going to do? And he said, you're going to be just fine. This is what you're going to do. You're going to go in. You're going to give them some examples of some fuckery in your life. And you're going to tell them the spiritual principle that you applied behind that. And tell them that it worked out okay. So I guess that's what I'm going to do. I was fortunate enough on my journey to get sent to rehab. And I say that now. I didn't say that then. I got sent to rehab in Kentucky. And as y'all well know, that's a Commonwealth state and they do not play. I spent 14 and a half months in a rehab facility with 110 women. I had lots of time to learn how to practice these principles in all of my affairs. You know, women are backstabbing and petty and, like, it's ridiculous. I see y'all laughing because you know, right? It is ridiculous. And they put 110 of us in one common space. And you want to talk about thinking you're going to lose your mind. I think in the first dorm, there were like 30 people. And in the second dorm, when I got to move up, there were like 40 people, 40 women in one dorm. And then, like, I spent a lot of months in there because I was stubborn. I didn't want to move. Like, I didn't do the work, so they didn't move me forward. Finally, I got to be in, like, a hallway where everybody had, you know, just one roommate, but it was just a hallway full of rooms. But we didn't get to spend that time there. We had to come out, go to the cafeteria. They gave us jobs to do. We had to see these 110 women every day. And then they put us out into the world and was like, hey, go get a meeting. As a matter of fact, get 10 a week. So then you have to walk to your meetings, or you have to find a ride to your meeting. So you have to figure out, how am I going to call these people? You have to get a sponsor, right? All of these things. So for me, that took a lot of courage, right? Which is a spiritual principle. I'm going to open my book to those principles. It took a lot of honesty. I had to be honest with these women and be like, hey, I don't have anything. I walked in there with literally a duffel bag of clothes that didn't fit, because my family was like, well, okay, let's give her these. Like, I had to have something to wear, so they showed up, picked me up in jail with this duffel bag, and was like, hopefully these fit. And then they dropped me off 2 hours from home. So I had to accept the fact that this is where you are. And you're not leaving unless you want to go back to jail, which was okay. I mean, I did all right in jail. It was a very set schedule, and I do well with that. So, but I had no cards left to play, like nothing left on the table. So I was like, well, we'll try it and see what happens. You know, we'll try this thing. So that was quite the journey. I'm going through these steps. I have a sponsor outside of the house. I'm doing my best to apply these principles. I'm hitting the board left and right. They're giving me all these contracts to do because I'm stubborn and I'm self-centered and I don't want to do this and I don't want to do that and I don't know how to act in this house with 110 women. So I'm getting contract after contract after contract, working the steps with my sponsor, working the steps in this house. So needless to say, I got lots of practice, and thank God for that. Because when I left and life hit me in the face, I mean, it hit me in the face. The job that I first got was with my family. Y'all know how hard it is to work with your family. And my family is crazy. Like, I'm sure part of it, I made them crazy, but my family's just crazy. And I had to work with them, had to work for them. I had to get along with them. And I had to learn how to be a diesel mechanic all at the same time. So that was loads of fun. And I did that for a couple years. And at some point, my mom said, "You're the most sane person on this hill." And I thought, "You guys are fucked. You know, you guys are screwed. If I'm the most sane person on this hill, you are screwed." But that is because I had shown them some spiritual principles, okay? I had shown them that when life gets tough, you can still be okay. You can, I don't know how the book puts it, we, essentially what it says is we, act sanely even when other people don't, right? I mean, essentially that's what it tells us. And I had shown them that when my dad flipped his shit over a truck not being right, I was okay. I didn't have to come back at him. I didn't have to curse at him. I could look him in the face and say, "Sorry, I screwed up," and go back and do my job. There's a lot of spiritual principles behind that, you guys. That's hard. That's really hard. I think probably that was one of the hardest tests of, like, my sobriety and the steps that I've worked and the work that I've put into it was actually working with your family and getting along with them. I remember a time, I'm going to say this, and I don't think she's going to care, she's in the room, but so I made amends to my daughter, my oldest daughter, and I was so scared to do this, right? I was so nervous because I had really screwed her up. And I made this amends, and she looked at me and said, "Okay, but I don't forgive you." And I was like, fuck, now what? You know, she's pissed. Now what do I do? And the only thing I could do was be like, "That's okay. I just want for you to know that I've screwed up. I know I've screwed up, and I'm going to show you something different." So I've spent the years after showing her something different, because that's what we do with these spiritual principles. That's where the better demonstration is. We can show people something different. Today, she took off work to come be here with me. You know, like, we're best friends today. She asked me for help. Y'all know how hard it is for her to ask me for help? But she does that because I've shown her something different. My youngest daughter, she's at ETSU. She's a freshman. She just started. And she called me the other day having a come apart over some black dress pants. And I was like, "What the fuck?" That's what I wanted to say. "What the fuck is wrong with you? They're black dress pants. Like, go to JCPenney. You know?" But I couldn't say that. I couldn't say that. She called me. She called me, you guys. She could have called anybody in the world. But she called me because she knew I would apply some patience. I would show her some love. And I would help her get some black dress pants, for God's sake. You know? But I'm at work when she calls me, so I'm trying to multitask. I've got customers in front of me, and I'm managing money. And she calls me having to come apart about black sweatpants or dress pants. And so it's just those little things where you can apply some goodness to the world. It's those little things, you know. My journey has been so crazy. The money factor for me is insane. I get real stressed about it, and it's one of those things where I know you have to turn it over to God, right? But I have 3 kids that I try to help get through school, through college. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of cars and cell phones and tuitions and on and on and on. And for me, I get real twisted up in my head, like, okay, money is such a materialistic thing, like a worldly thing. How do you turn that over to God? You know? But I'm telling you all, if you do that, every time that I have thought, okay, this is the time I'm going to have to tell them we just can't do this. I'm going to have to buck up and tell them it's not there and we just can't do it. Y'all, something happens. Something happens and we get to do it anyway. We get to, you know, like, I don't know. I thought when Dixie went to ETSU, I was like, I don't know how we're going to pay for this apartment, this extra tuition. Like, she got some grants. The day before school started, they sent her a letter. She has a full ride. Guys, that's faith. That is faith. And all of that comes from when I started this journey, I wanted to get my children back. And I was like, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? I had a long, long talk with God. And I was like, I know I can't do this. I know I'm not going to be able to have my kids, be a successful parent, go to work, sponsor women, do umpteen 11 meetings a week. Like, I know better. And he said, it's okay, I've got you. Right? I've got you. It's okay. So I prayed to him, and I was like, okay, this is what I want with my children. I want to be able to break these generational curses we have, because I know you guys know what that's like. I know some of y'all have those generational curses in your life. What those look like in my family is no one has been to college. No one has been to college. The majority of my family are still in that hopeless state of mind and body, okay? The majority of my family, both sides. They don't know God. They don't have a purpose in life. And they don't give a shit. Okay? That's what my generational curses look like. And so I threw that at God's feet and was like, listen, I don't want this anymore. This is not what I want for my kids. I don't want to raise them up in this anymore. Help me. Y'all, I'm teaching my kids to have healthy relationships because I've learned to apply these principles in all of my affairs. I'm teaching them to manage money because I've learned to apply these principles, right? I'm teaching them to go to school. They're the first kids. Like, they're the first ones in my family that are going to school to do what they want to do. They got to choose who they want to be and go to school to be that said person. To me, that's amazing. All because I said, okay, I can't do this by myself. I'm going to put in the action and let you have the rest of it. And that's all, like, that's all that I'm capable of doing. I don't have anything else, right? I don't have anything else but wake up in the morning and say, okay, God, you're going to have to do this today too because I still suck at it, right? If I manage it, I run it into the ground. I become a heroin addict. I live on the streets. That's what I do. But y'all, my life today doesn't look anything like what I wanted it to look like or what I thought it was going to look like, or I don't know. I don't know if y'all did this, but when I got sober, I had this picture, right, of what I wanted my life to look like, and this is what I was working toward. And that kind of kept me focused on doing all the shit that you have to do that you don't want to do. But they tell you have to do it anyway. So I had this picture of what I wanted my life to look like, and that's what I was working for. That picture changed. It changed a million times over. But I don't want that picture. I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't change the flat tires. I mean, the stuff that happens in life, right? I have to maintain 5 vehicles or something. Y'all, that's a pain in the ass. But I do that, and I do it with a smile on my face. I'm like, oh, you had another flat tire? Okay. Let me just get online, order you a tire. Let's make that happen. Not because I want to, but because that's what God said we're going to do today. I'm not going to steal from the cash register because God said not today. I'm going to put it in the bank. You know, I'm going to answer the phone with the come aparts from Johnson City. They happen on a daily basis. She's a little high strung. She comes by honest. You know, I'm going to answer the phone. I'm going to throw some patience at it. I'm going to throw some love because God said this is what's happening today and you're okay. It's that simple. You work the steps, you apply the principles, and life just happens. I don't know. The book says these things tend to happen naturally, like right after this piece where it talks about a more important demonstration is in our homes and our occupations. And then it says these things happen naturally. And they do. They just do because what other option do I have? Right after that, it says, if you don't and you hang on to these resentments, you're gone again. Right? I know that's what's in the cards for me. I either do this or I do that. And y'all, I'm done doing that. I did that for a real long time, and I was really good at it. But I'm done with that. I don't want to do that anymore, so I do this. And I apply the principles, and I'm nice to the people. I work with the public, by the way. Y'all, that is hard. That is so hard. But I will tell you one thing. It's the oddest thing. I work at a hardware store, so you think that has nothing to do with recovery. But I also work in a small town where we don't have recovery centers. And I think there's like one AA meeting in the meeting guide, but when I tried to find it, it wasn't there, so I'm not sure if it's there or not. So I'm most likely the only big book that these people see. And every day from that hardware store, I speak to someone about recovery. And I don't even have to push that. I don't even have to tell them I'm in recovery. Like you were saying, they just know. They just know. People that used to know me, I've been to meetings, I've tried to make amends to people that I used to sling drugs to. They don't know me. I have to tell them who I am because I applied these principles in all of my affairs. That's the only reason. Not because I'm somebody. Not because I look so different. Because my spirit is different. Because I carry these principles. When the book talks about becomes a way of life, please let it become a way of life. Please let it become a way of life. You will never regret that choice. There's not one time, I mean, there's been a lot of things I've regretted. Never once have I regretted making this a way of life. It is not my sole vocation, and thank God for that, because y'all, sponsors and stuff are hard. So it's not the only thing that I do, but it is the thing that I do that I love. It is the thing that I do that I love. So please make it a way of life. That's what it's meant to do. And when you allow it to do what it's meant to do, big shit happens. That's it.
She was worried I was going to be hard to follow. I'm going to break everything before we're done here. My name's Clinch, and I fucking love drugs. I'm not here because I hate them. I'm here because I love them too much. When I start, I don't stop, and nobody wants to see that. I was asked to be a part of this panel. I was a little confused, honestly, because I've been accused of being a walking, talking big book, and I think there's some truth in that. I didn't remember ever seeing better demonstration in the big book. So I asked for clarification. I was told page 19, and I said, oh, yeah, okay. Much more important demonstration, it says. I actually have this app, EAA, on my phone. I looked up the word demonstration. There's six times in there, and none of it says better demonstration. That's why I was confused. Sometimes it's hard to be me. None of us makes a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. I wanted to work in recovery, in early recovery. My sponsor said, just hold off, wait a couple of years. And observe. And I waited a couple years and I observed and I saw that most of the people who I saw who claimed they were hopeless varieties who went into recovery as a full-time job ended up relapsing. And I said, okay, I get it. Now I understand. We don't think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. I have known people in recovery who say they were hopeless varieties who have been successful at working in recovery. It's not impossible, but I think it's harder than it is for people who aren't in recovery. That's just what I've observed. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. All of us spend much of our spare time in the sort of effort which we are going to describe. A few are fortunate enough to be so situated they can do it a lot. And I'm kind of looking forward to retirement because I'm going to be able to increase the amount of service work I do because I consider myself fortunate to be able to do service work. The principles that we are demonstrating what's that all about? It's about relationships. It's all about relationships. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Every single time, every single day that goes by that an addict or an alcoholic doesn't drink or use is a freaking miracle, and I will never minimize or diminish that. But the real miracle of recovery is relationships, restored relationships, and healthy relationships. Because I never had relationships in the wild. When I was in the wild, I had hostage situations. I either wanted to be around someone so bad that I would be, do, or say anything that I thought they wanted me to do or be or say so I could be around them so they'd accept me. And if somebody wanted to be around me that bad, you bet I was going to make them do or say or be all kinds of manner of things in order to be around me. So I either was taking hostages or I was a hostage. I had no idea what a healthy relationship looked like. I had to learn that in recovery. It's all about relationships. Why is it about relationships? Because if I was sitting on a desert island fermenting coconut milk and smoking whatever I could find and dry up to see what would work, nobody would freaking care, you see? Nobody would freaking care. But I don't do that. I don't sit on a desert island. I come out into society and I bring this crap with me. And so I have to be domesticated. You see, I don't call it inactive addiction. I say when I was in the wild, because I was a wild animal. And if you think that taming is adequate for a wild animal, just ask those two magicians who got chomped by the white tiger. You see, taming is a change of behavior. I needed domestication. Domestication is a change of nature. And that's what I needed. I needed a change of nature. I didn't know that. I didn't find that out until many years after I got into recovery. But it's all about, the principles are all about teaching me how to deal with you. Teaching me how not to be a dick. Teaching me to stop being so damn self-centered and start thinking about someone else. And these principles work. They're important. I didn't know how to have relationships. I sure as heck didn't know how to deal with people. And it's been an ongoing process. It's taken a long time for me. I'm really, really slow because I really suck at relationships. And it's taken years and years and years for me to get to where I am. It's taken 30-something years for me to get to where I am. And I still kind of suck at relationships a lot, but I'm getting better all the time. I can look back and I can see there's progress. The relationships I have today, the people who are closest to me, are people who walk the walk and talk the talk. I have mad respect for their recovery. And they all, to a man or a woman, they all have something I want to learn. So the people who are closest to me have these three things in common. They walk the walk, they talk the talk. I have mad respect for their recovery. And they all have something I want to learn. And the amazing thing is if you asked any one of those people about me, they'd say the same thing. That I walk the walk and talk the talk. That they have respect for my recovery and that I have something they want to learn. It's weird. But it's called reciprocation. And that's what real relationships are about. That's what healthy relationships are about. It's about being reciprocal. One of the hardest things for me to learn was I do not have friends. I cannot have friends. I can only be a friend. And I can be a friend whether you like it or not, you see? But I can't demand that you be my friend. I can't make you be my friend. I can't make you do anything. I have no power to have friends. I only have power to be a friend. And if I focus on being a friend, I find that I have friends. Not because I demanded it, not because I went out and found them and dragged them by their ear to my house and kept them trapped in a cage until they said they were my friend or whatever it took, but because I treated them decently and they recognized that I'm a decent human being. How did I treat them decently? I followed the principles. How did I know to do that? Because I followed the principles. I learned what the principles are, and I learned that they're about relationships. They're about treating people decently. They're about interacting with people. My first sponsor told me, your thinker's broke. I said, okay, so you're going to take me through the steps and my thinker will be fixed, right? There you go thinking again, he said. What part of your thinker's broke don't you get? My thinker's broke. The fact of the matter is I'm trapped in a bone cage with a raging fucking addict. So what am I going to do? Everywhere I go, I bring this shit with me. Every relationship I enter, however brief, I bring this shit with me. And I can learn to tuck it in or I can ignore it and run around like a bull in a china shop, causing harm everywhere I go. It's better for me to learn to tuck it in because I don't like hurting people. And for a long time, I was hurting people and I didn't know how not to. And so I used a lot because I was hurting people because I didn't know how not to. And part of what I had to do in recovery was learn how not to. And damn it, it all comes down to being a little disciplined and learning a few things and mostly getting out of my head and thinking about others first instead of me. And it turns out when I do that, I stop hurting people. And when I get back into my self-centered bullshit, guess what? I start hurting people again. I don't like that. But today I know what to do. Today I know what to do. And when the thought comes, I've learned the thoughts come. I think crazy shit. I'm very blessed. The lovely and talented Renee, my wife, she's proof that God has a sense of humor. She's been in recovery 13 months longer than me. And every time I get a whole program on her, she smiles and pats me on my head and says, keep coming back, newbie. But I'm blessed that I'm in a relationship where I can say the crazy shit that's in here out loud so I can hear how silly it is. And she doesn't go, what the fuck? She just goes, because she knows. She's been around me long enough to know, I think crazy shit, I do. My thinker's still broke. I don't know that it's ever going to be fixed. This program is not about fixing my thinker. This program is about me recognizing when I'm thinking crazy thoughts and when I'm thinking silly thoughts. And I have these great ideas, and I go to my sponsor, and I say, what do you think about this? And he goes, let me know how that works out for you. He doesn't say, that's stupid. He says, let me know how that works out for you. And I go, okay. All right, better rethink. Better rethink. Restored relationships were where I started. I was in early recovery. I didn't get a sponsor or take the steps until I was about 10 months in recovery because I was working the hip slicking cool program where I was going to climb the ladder of social success and become a recovery guru. And that was the program for me. I didn't need steps. I didn't need a sponsor. I wasn't sick like you guys. That was my arrogance. I came in just to borrow your program for a little while, get my head straight, and that was going to be fine, see? So I did everything right. I did what I was supposed to do, right? A few weeks after I got sober, I hooked up with a girl. By the time I was 90 days clean and sober, I moved in with her and her mom and her baby. By the time I was 6 months clean and sober, I gotten her pregnant. And at 9 months clean and sober, I lost my job, and I couldn't afford to pay child support to the family I'd abandoned, much less support the family I had started new. This is what I did. You see, and I when I finally got to where, at that point, I reached my spiritual bottom. I knew I was going to get high again. I knew I was going to die. And I'd love to stand here and say, oh, I went and got a sponsor and took steps, but I didn't. I went to my home group meeting just because that's what I always did, and I didn't know what else to do. And there was a fellow there who introduced himself as a recovered addict, and I was like, wow, really? I'd never heard that before. But I knew I wanted it instantly. I knew I wanted it. So I made a mental note to talk to him afterwards while I was putting away chairs. And he came up to me and he said, you want to go out to eat? And I said, yeah. And we went out to eat and he said, you're the hopeless variety and you're going to die. I'd never heard that before either. In fact, I never heard most of the stuff he was sharing in the meeting. And it was like mind-boggling. I'd never heard that stuff shared in a meeting. Because, you know, I didn't go to those meetings where those guys said, get a book, get a sponsor, take the steps. You know, I went to the meetings where we talked about how our week was and what great people we were, you know. I'm awesome today, you know, those kinds of meetings. And so I didn't want anything to do with the program. I wanted everything to do with the fellowship. I was going to come a mover and shaker in the fellowship. And that was my mistake. But in doing that, I came to understand that I cause as much or more harm when I'm sober as I do when I'm high. Why? Because if I can con and scheme and manipulate when I'm high and my brain's fucked up, how much better am I at it when my mind's clear, right? And you know, I told my sponsor these things that, you know, he's like, well, what's with the girl? What's with the baby? What's with all this? And, you know, I got to tell him my story, and he's like, you know, sounds to me like you probably caused more harm in the last 9 months than you caused in any 2 years in the wild. And I'm like, it's probably true. Probably true. And so, you know, it simplified things in one way, you know, because this program has to be simple for guys like me, because my sponsor says it says I could complicate a one-man parade. And I like it simple, and it simplified things for me, because when it came time to do the amends, I sort of already had a list of people who had been immediately or recently harmed by me, and I got to start there. People that were in recovery also that I had harmed during that period of time. And shortly after. But, yeah, these principles are, they teach me how to deal with you and not be a dick. And, you know, I'm a big fan of that because I think that all the major religions are the same. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and might. Don't be a dick. Right? Love your neighbor as yourself. Don't be a dick. Right? And so, you know, I focus a lot on don't be a dick. Because when I get up in here, you know, this is not a good place for me to be, and yet I spend a phenomenal amount of time here. And it's not healthy, and it's not good for me. And when I get up in this place, and I'm not thinking about anybody else, I go right back to the old bad behaviors because I'm not thinking about anybody else. Most of the harm I've done in recovery has been simple thoughtlessness. It's not been intentional. It's not like I go out to hurt people. Most of the harm I've done has been simple thoughtlessness. I've said something or done something that was inappropriate or hurtful because I didn't think. I didn't think about the impact of what I was going to say. I didn't think about the impact of what I was going to do. I didn't think about the people around me. Crimes of omission and crimes of commission, both. Because there have been times where I should have done something and I didn't. And it caused harm because I didn't do something. That serenity prayer really, really helps me. If acceptance was the answer to all my problems, I wouldn't need the steps. You see? Because if I stand by, because to me the best definition of acceptance for addicts and alcoholics is pretty simple. We endure without protest or reaction. If I endure without protest and reaction as evil unfolds around me and I endure it without protest or reaction, I'm accepting it, you see? And I'm allowing it to happen. So I have to be careful about this acceptance thing. Acceptance is a huge part of my recovery. There's no doubt about it. But like all things, it can be misused or misconstrued. And there are times when I must act. There are times when I must change the things I can. And then I need that courage. And there are times when I must accept the things I cannot change. And that third part, that wisdom to know the difference, that's where God comes in, because I'm kind of crappy about that too. But it's all about these relationships that we have, these relationships with however brief. I've come to understand that every interaction with a human being, however brief, is a relationship. Even if I just say hi to the mailman. And I'm so surprised sometimes by people because I don't realize the impact I have on them often. Like we were moving some stuff and we had to get a U-Haul and I parked the U-Haul in front of my house and I came out to the U-Haul and the mailman was there and I walked up to grab the mail so he didn't have to, he had a box, he didn't have to bring it up to the porch and he said, "Are you moving?" I said, no, we're helping somebody else move. And he said, "Oh, okay." He said, "I was worried because you guys have been here a long time and you're really good guys and I'm going to keep you around. We don't want to lose you in the neighborhood." I'm like, "Wait, what? What are you talking about? I keep to myself. I don't mess around. I don't hardly know anybody in the neighborhood." You know, my wife was across the street, in a little store across the street. My wife was across the street one time and some lady came up to her and was complaining about her husband having to keep up with the Joneses, and she says, "Does your husband try to keep up with the Joneses?" And my wife looks at her and goes, my husband doesn't know there are Joneses. Yeah, it's pretty true. It's pretty true. I don't seek out relationships. I deal with them when they come, but I don't go seeking them out, generally speaking. I don't go find out who my neighbors are and try to interact with them, because I suck at relationships, and it's kind of daunting and scary, if I'm honest. And so I try not to. I try to just deal with the relationships that come as best I can. And I've been civilized. I've been domesticated. And it's taken a long time. I think I was, 12? Well, I was 14 years in recovery when we got married. So about 12 years when we met. And I still sucked at relationships really, really bad. Because I had spent a lot of that time focusing on just recovering and focusing on sponsoring and doing service work and starting meetings and that kind of stuff. And you know, God is amazing because he gives me the sponsorship I need and he puts me in the situations I need to be in. And when I mention that the people who are close to me, I have mad respect for their recovery and they all have something I want to learn, that includes my wife. She's really good with people, and I really suck. So I pay attention, and she helps me. And sometimes, mostly it's verbally, but sometimes she's, sometimes I mismanage my life to the point that she has to step in and do it for me. Like I did when I was in the wild and society had to step in and manage my life for me for a while, several times. We're at McDonald's one time and the fellow said, what do you want? And I said, like a half a dozen chicken nuggets. And he says, well, we only have 6 or 10. How many would you like? And I looked at this kid and I'm like, so I can have 6 but not have a dozen? Yes, sir, he said. How many would you like? Well, I'm ready. I'm pumped up. I'm going to school this punk, right? She steps in front of me and goes, he'll have 6. She saves me from myself, you see, because I suck at relationships. Another time we were at one of the fast food places, and the guy says, you know, do you want something to drink with that? And I say, yeah, what sizes do you have? Oh, we have medium and large. Medium means in between. There's no medium and large. There's just small and large. And once again, she steps in front of me and goes, he'll have the large. Saves me from myself. But it's not just that. It's not just, I mean, it's every interaction with another human being. I have a tendency to view human beings as cardboard stand-ups who are mostly annoying and in my way. That's where I go when I'm up here. And I have to get out of that shit, and I have to recognize, because my God tells me that every one of you is made in his image and has dignity and demands a certain amount of respect for the fact that you exist. And I have to respect that. And it turns out if I respect that, then I treat you decently. And if I treat you decently, guess what? I don't do harm. So it all comes down to that again. And it's the littlest things. It's the big things. It's the little things. My boss, our home office in North Carolina, and once a year or so, the boss pays me to come out there for a week. And we talk about where the company's going to be in 5 to 10 years. And they talk about, we're talking about where the company's going to be in 5 to 10 years and what my role is going to be. Not like, you might be there, you don't know. We don't know. It's like, yeah, this is what you're going to be doing in 5 to 10 years. This is where we want to put you. That's weird. Like, I spent so many years being afraid I would be fired tomorrow. And the fear was rational. It wasn't irrational fear. I was a crappy employee. I should have been fired tomorrow over and over again. And I lived in that fear for so long, and it's kind of weird, still weird to me, that these people think they want to keep me around. They think I'm an asset to the company. And it's because relationships, my coworkers, the people I work for, the people who work under me. When I first started working at this company, I was having a problem with the guy who was over me. He was a micromanager, and it was really driving me crazy. And my sponsor finally got tired of me bitching about work. So he says to me, have you ever done a focus 4-step on your career? One of the principles is honesty. Man, I knew if I said yes, it would be a lie. But if I said no, he'd make me do one. So I'm hesitating, and he goes, I'll take that as a no. So he said, you're going to have to do one. So I did. Basically, he wanted me to write down the name of everybody who I'd ever worked for, ever worked with, or had worked for me, under me. All the way back to when I was babysitting and mowing frickin' lawns when I was a kid. And then I had to do the other columns. And when I was done with it, we sat down and we went over it. And I found that there were some amends I needed to make that I hadn't ever made before, even though I had 2+ decades in recovery, because they weren't people who had come up on 4 steps before. And they weren't people I'd thought about at step 8 before. And they were exposed in this inventory I did on my career. And I'll never forget, about a month later, we were at the meeting, and he comes up to me before the meeting, and he says, so how's work since you did that focus 4-step on your career? Well, I said, it's amazing, Michael. Everybody at work quit being an asshole. And he goes, oh, really? Everybody at work, he kind of laughs. Oh, really? Everybody at work quit being an asshole. I said, yeah, it's amazing. And he said, what do they all have in common? They quit reacting to this guy, you see? When I changed, then how they reacted to me changed, you see? And I can't force people to do or be or say anything unless I take them hostage, and I don't do that anymore. And if I can't force people to do or say or be anything, then I have to accept them for who they are. And if I don't like the relationship I'm in, the only thing I can change is this guy. But if I do, then it will change how they react to me, you see? And if I find that if I'm in a so-called toxic relationship where I'm feeling like I'm being harmed, if I take the focus off myself and how injured I am, and I start to think about my part, then I can make a change, and suddenly things get better. Everybody at work stops being an asshole. Today I understand I don't have an obligation to do these things, not in the sense of I owe somebody something, people I've never met, people I'm only going to see one time in my life. I have an obligation in a moral sense because, again, my God tells me every one of you is made in his image and are worthy of my respect to some degree because of that. And that means that I have to treat people decently no matter who they are and no matter how they treat me. And it means that when I walk into the pilot station, instead of staring at my phone and sort of ignoring the person there behind the counter, I have to stop and assess my impact. Because they're people too. And if I walk in and I'm kind of a dick to them, you know, is it going to make them have a bad day? I don't think I have that much power. But does it impact them? Yeah, I think it does. If I'm neutral, they're no better or worse off than before I walked in. But if I smile and I be polite and I'm nice and I interact with them a little and sort of recognize that they're human in a way that they know I'm recognizing that they're human and not just a cardboard stand-up, and then I think maybe I've given them a smile. Maybe I've made their day a little better. And what the fuck is wrong with that? It cost me nothing, you see? It cost me nothing except get the fuck out of here and don't be a dick. It's these principles. These principles. I wouldn't need these principles if I was stranded on that desert island, because nobody would fucking care if I killed myself drinking and using, because I wouldn't be causing anybody any harm. But again, like I said, the problem here is that I refuse to go sit on the desert island and be by myself. I'm going to walk around in society carrying this baggage shit with me. So I better learn to tuck it in. That's all I got. Thanks.
Yay! Oh my gosh, I'm awake now. Yeah, you know, whenever he was talking about, you know, whenever he was talking about, what was he talking about? Where he couldn't talk to the guy with the half dozen. You know, and all that. Okay, I was like, man, I am not allowed to look at receipts at fast food. Yeah, have you ever looked at fast food? They always get you like 20 cents here, you know. I ask them about it. But anyway, so I'm not allowed to look at receipts no more. But anyway, hey, we really appreciate you all. Let's give both of them a hand. Okay, at 10:30